SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Underdog Podcast on UnderdogDynasty.com, SB Nation's home for Group 5 football. Joe Londrigan and Eric Henry here with you as always, and we are joined by Mr. Evan Dudley of AL.com, once again, a repeat offender, if you will, but that's because we have some big news to dive into coming out of Conference USA. Head coach of the UAB Blazers, Bill Clark, announced on Twitter this past Friday that he will retire from his position effective August 1st. So we'll absolutely dive into that as well as some other questions about CUSA and the Blazer football program. But, you know, gentlemen, how are we doing today? You know, Evan, we'll start with you since you're the guest of honor today.
Doing great. Always a pleasure to be with you guys.
Awesome. I know it's a pleasure to have us on as well. And, you know, we'll talk about this in a second. It's nice to have someone who shares my musical taste because the last couple of guests we've had, Eric, it's been the opposite. They've been more of your side of the musical spectrum.
Well, here's the thing that makes Evan a great guest, right? Is he is, you know, has a very eclectic musical taste. So he's across the spectrum as opposed to our last few musical guests in which had you in a very uncomfortable realm over there in your corner of the universe up there in the Pacific Northwest, Joe.
I wouldn't say uncomfortable. I wouldn't use that verbiage. It was more just like, I'm just happy to be here. I don't know what this conversation's about. But like you guys were like, yeah, NBA young boy. And I was like, sure. My brain was just like the monkey clapping the cymbals, you know.
That will be me when I attend my first Guar concert, Joe. With
awesome. Can't wait for that day. All right. Well, without further ado, then let's dive into the big news. Evan, you know, obviously, Coach Clark looks like he's stepping away from football. Sounds like the cause was an issue with a kind of a spinal injury that went untreated for a long period of time. Any light that you can shed there would be appreciated to start with.
He had a Zoom conference that afternoon after announcing his retirement. He kind of filled us in on a few of those things. One being the original injury happened almost 40 years ago, 1983, when he was a high school student playing under his dad in Piedmont High School in Alabama. He was squatting and he suffered the injury. It was a L4, L5 vertebrae. They started pinching onto a nerve. In 98, 99 or 97, right there in the late 90s, he had a dissectomy, to sort of ease that up a little bit and help out. But, over the past, you know, few years, it's starting to come back and be a little bit worse. And it got to the point that a spinal fusion surgery was necessary. There was nothing he could really do to put it off much longer. And instead of, you know, just trying to go for the surgery and see how he felt in a couple of weeks, the best idea for him is just go ahead and, you know, make a retirement, make sure he fully cooperates first before, you know, maybe taking another chance of coaching, or, you know, he could ride off into the sunset. I mean, he technically had 30 years in the Alabama education system as a coach, at different colleges as well as in the high school ranks. So he also had his retirement benefits are also there to go. So, I mean, that probably had a little bit to do with it as well, because he did have 30 years in the education system. But it was probably just this back problem that he really needed to have solved. And it was to a point that he couldn't ignore it any longer.
I mean, I think I can speak for pretty much everybody when I say health absolutely comes first. So don't fault him for making that decision at all. It did come to as a sort of a surprise though. And, you know, I gotta ask, was there any inkling that something like this was coming down the pipeline as far as the UAB administration and the team itself was concerned?
Not at all. I think it was very much a surprise. That's why the tweet originally came out from Bill Clark's official Twitter account, because it was a decision he had made very late. You know, it almost came at the 11th hour. He was kind of struggling with it up until that the night before, but went ahead and decided to make the decision to you know, just to leave the program in you know, in good hands, to where his surgery, his recovery would not be a distraction for the program. You know, having built it what it is to now, to where it is, you know, a competitive power in Conference USA, ready to move to the American, I think because of its just the program being in good shape has also contributed to his decision, knowing that, you know, it would continue to progress, like he has done these past few years.
He mentioned in that statement that you referenced that he wants to continue to be a part of the Birmingham community and the UAB community specifically. Obviously, as we're recording this, it's only been 4 or 5 days since he made that announcement. But any insight that he's shed or that anybody close to him has shed in terms of what's next for him?
Well, as far as just know exactly what's next for him is the surgery and recovery. The best prognosis that he's gotten is, a 6-month recovery time, but it could take longer than that. So, I think this is a decision that, he didn't make lightly. He made it very much in a, just to kind of, step away, make sure his health is right. But I also don't think that maybe he's done yet. I mean, he could try the broadcast booth like a lot of coaches do, but I think within a couple of years, he'll get that itch. If he hasn't already, he'll get that itch back to coaching because that's a, essentially what he has been a part of. It's pretty much like you hear Saban will say, what am I going to do after I retire? I've been part of football my entire life. That is the same way with Bill Clark. He grew up a coach's son, so he has been a part of that life, his entire life. He immediately went into coaching, has coached his entire career, spent 1 year outside of Alabama. So he's very much an Alabama guy. So I feel like he will remain, this is his home. He'll be around the program. Just kind of be kind of a figurehead, if you will, because, with Bryant Benson being named the interim head coach, he's going to have to do things the way he wants to do, the decisions he has to make, not making the decisions that Bill Clark would, but the decisions he would make. But as far as the actual program and the staff, they will remain in place. A lot of it will still be Bill Clark's fingerprint. But it'll be more Vince that's, taking control and making the decisions, within this year, while Bill kind of stands with the sideline and is, like I said, that figurehead that guys can still come and talk to him. Coaches can still rely on him, chew his ear a little bit, maybe get some knowledge from him. So, I mean, it's something that, he wants to be around, but I also don't think he wants to be a distraction to the program as well.
It certainly makes sense given where the program's at and the momentum that they've built the last couple of years. And as you mentioned, offensive coordinator Bryant Vincent is going to be taking over the reins as head coach, at least in the interim. A lot of folks call it the elevator pitch. Some of the Gen Z kids call it the TLDR, too long, didn't read. What's the elevator pitch on Bryant Vincent as far as his coaching style?
On a personal level, I really like Bryant Vincent. He's a really good guy, one of those just really good guy assistants that's in the College of Football kind of network there. So, first of all, really proud of the guy for getting an opportunity, but also think he has a chance to succeed. This is essentially a long interview for him. They also said they would engage in a national coaching search at the end of the season, but given what Vincent can accomplish this year, he would be, part of that kind of that pool of candidates. So, but I think he has the opportunity to be successful. This is a guy who spent, a number of years as a high school head coach in Alabama. He won a state title in 2010 before jumping to the college ranks. He started off with Bill in 2014 as the offensive coordinator. And obviously when the program was shut down, he ended up going to South Alabama under Joey Jones and was there for 3 years before coming back to UAB. So this is a guy with a lot of loyalty. He's got a lot of connections to the Alabama community, Alabama high school. So, recruiting the state will be, there won't be any drop off, with the staff and the relationships they have built. But I think Vincent will have a chance to really open up this offense a little bit more. With Bill Clark as the head coach, he might rely more on his defense on certain decisions, whereas Vincent, might be able to open up this offense a little bit more and be a little bit more creative, as being the one who making those decisions in critical points of the game.
Man, this is going to be an offensive focus COSA this year and in 2023 as well. It looks like with, the coaching hires that have come up in the last 6 months or so with, obviously grouping Sonny Cumbie into that and the way that Western Kentucky's played, et cetera. Evan, one last question here before I turn it over to Eric. Let's play devil's advocate and say that Bryant Vincent is not the long-term guy. Who are some early candidates that you want to maybe see be considered for, this head coaching job other than, of course, Coach Vincent?
I think one candidate that will probably come out will be a local high school coach. I personally probably would not select him, but it would not be a bad idea. Mark Freeman with Thompson, who has one of the better high school programs in the country. Obviously, he coached Talia Tagovailoa, Tua's little brother, a number of five stars at that program. You know, I've covered a few of their games the past few years, you know, along with covering high school in this state. And I mean, it's a incredible program. And he's a very much more offensive, has been really good friends with Bill Clark. You know, this is a guy who also coached at Spanish Fort, I believe, after Bryant Benson actually left to join the college ranks. Mark Freeman assumed the duties of head coach at Spanish Fort, where he won a couple of titles with Tyler Judson as his quarterback in high school. So there's just so many connections into the South Alabama Spanish Fort. So I think Mark Freeman is a name that will pop up. From there, you'll start looking at other assistants from probably some major programs who are looking to maybe get their first job. At this point, I probably couldn't possibly come up with a name off the top of my head unless it was someone, you know, more closely associated with the program. You could look at Joe Craddock at Troy. He was the tight ends coach. He was hired as Troy as the head coach this past season. So, you know, he has a season to kind of, you know, maybe elevate the Troy program, maybe get a shot at UAB, which is very much already kind of supplanted as a you know, a promising program where he might have to rebuild a little bit on Troy. But there's also some other you know, options out there just as far as other head coaches, maybe on a Division II or FCS level. So it's going to be a very interesting coaching search once you get past if Vincent is the guy or not. You know, it'll be a very interesting coaching search because the last one they had was with Bill Clark. And, you know, this is the guy who saw the opportunity that UAB had to become better than what it was. And he really took that and where no one else really believed it and made this a program that had not seen any kind of success really in the 20 years prior.
It's a deep pool and an attractive job. With that, Eric, I'll pass the baton to you.
Yeah, Evan, you know, not too much for me to add. I don't think Joe did a pretty good job of covering all the major bases. Just will ask this. When you look at Bill Clark's salary, I believe it was somewhere in that $1.5, $1.6 million range, and the program transitioning to the American, just piggybacking off of Joe's last question about the coaching search. Again, not asking you to come up with, you know, a list of names or not, but I guess I'm just wondering, from a budgetary aspect, if you go into the American, UAB probably has to be, you know, in terms of salary wise, the top 2, 3, 4 gigs in terms of the American, in terms of, you know, maybe the budget to hire a coach. Does that provide an additional level of flexibility in terms of who they may be able to go after? Or do you just think if it's not Bryant Vincent, you know, that search will kind of be limited to, as you mentioned, you know, maybe some local high school coaches and assistants in the FCS level?
I think when it's all said and done, you know, just being into the American, you're looking at the budget increase in and of itself alone, just with their TV deals. Obviously, it's an annual $7 million. They won't get that to begin with, but that will grow as they, you know, continue into this conference. But just having additional money from the TV as well as the conference in and of itself, that's going to create a bigger operating budget for UAB. And I believe with that, they should be able to, you know, attract a you know, a successful coach. You also look at their facilities. They have a great training facility. They have a great new stadium. They're entering their second year in. It's been all over TV this past spring with the USFL as well as the World Games in July. So, you know, they have a lot of things in this for this program for that is attractive to a coach. And the pay, I believe, will be able to increase just from the fact that their operating budget will increase as they head into the American Conference. But it's very interesting. I think, you know, they'll be able to maybe push past a pool of high school coaches and assistants and maybe actually, you know, grab an up-and-coming coordinator or a small-time head coach that, you know, could be very successful with UAB.
Evan, want to bring it back to Bryant Vincent. And, you know, for regular listeners of the podcast, you know, Joe and I have had plenty of discussions about the UAB offense and how efficient it is in terms of the run game, but also it's a passing offense that does like to push the ball downfield. You look at Bryant Vincent's offense, his quarterbacks routinely are some between 8 and 9. I believe Dylan Hopkins was at 9.9 yards per attempt last year, which is easily the tops in Conference USA. Can you kind of just, you know, go a little bit deeper into maybe what type of offensive shift we may see, if at all, or will this be an offense that you think just revolves around guys like Dwayne McBride?
Well, I think with a guy like Dwayne McBride, you're going to have to kind of stick with a run. You can't you know, take away carries from that guy. You can't give him less opportunities because he is a guy that can make a, you know, a great play at any moment. You know, he can bounce off tackles. He can run through tackles. This is a guy who's just he's a home run threat waiting to happen almost every play. So, you know, you got to center that offense around a great running back. You also have a great offensive line that is used to running the ball, that powering down the field. So, I mean, that's something you got to keep. But also, I think, you know, with Bill Clark, you know, he might have been a little bit more conservative on the offensive side. You look at their passing game, it was more of a boom or bust, not a lot of, you know, middle passes, you know, kind of into the middle, you know, kind of just driving down the field a little bit. Is more just boom or bust on the passing game and then run the ball to kind of move the chains. But I think with Vincent, you'll see a little bit more expansion of the playbook as he takes over. You know, it'll be his decisions making on the field. So, you know, and, you know, on a third and five, instead of, you know, maybe running and planning to punt and let your defense, you know, he might take a, you know, come up with a more creative passing to get a first down in that situation and keep a drive going rather than playing to your defensive strengths, which will obviously be a strength this season for them, as it always is, their defense. But I think this offense will be able to expand a little bit. You saw some last year with Rajay Johnson-Sanders before he transferred to Troy. He kind of became their kind of wide receiver screen kind of option, and they started using that. He actually had a touchdown, the first one in Protective Stadium against Liberty. Unfortunately, it was called back for a block in the back. But, you know, that was something they were starting to open up with last year. You look at the tight end game and how they've opened up their tight ends the past couple of years. Obviously, you lose two great ones, but they've got a lot of bodies coming back, some talent in that position. So I think we'll just see the offense kind of grow a little bit and maybe be a little bit more aggressive rather than playing to the strength of their defense. You know, if you have an offense that can be that aggressive along with your defense that can really just create chaos for your opponent, I think you know, they have a really great chance of becoming an even better team maybe than what they have been.
Two more for you, we'll get you out of here. I feel it'd be remiss if he didn't ask this question. Simply put, Evan, what do you think Bill Clark's legacy will be at UAB and in Birmingham?
I mean, I think, well, speaking with him, I know he wants his legacy to be just, you know, the relationships he founded, you know, the love for the city and the city able to, you know, be able to show that back as well when the program was dismissed and building it back. But I mean, I think his legacy is just, you know, he took a program that had been a doormat of Conference USA for 20 years since they were even a football program. You know, they had two bowl eligible seasons, only went to one bowl in that time prior to Clark's arrival. Clark comes in, and I think maybe so much more than just, you know, what he was able to do with the program, but it was his loyalty to the program. It gets dismissed, and he does not go anywhere. He doesn't search for a new job. He stays there, you know, coordinates with the fan base, you know, because they're very supportive of getting the program back. 6 months later, it's reinstated, and he goes about rebuilding this program from scratch. So I think his legacy is going to be his loyalty to UAB, his loyalty to the city of Birmingham, something in which he has believed in for a long time. Being a lifelong Alabama resident, it was always something he believed that UAB had the potential to be greater than what it was. And I think that will be his legacy, was, you know, being loyal to the city and this program when he didn't have to be, and, you know, really bringing it into into something that they have never experienced before his time.
Evan, you know, we can't let you get out of here without having a little bit of fun with you. So we're going to play quick little rapid fire here for you and get you a couple questions before we get you out of here. Going to start with this. Nashville hot chicken or Texas barbecue?
Oh man, that's a tough one, because I mean, I guess I'm gonna have to go with Texas barbecue, but it has to be brisket. It can't be pork, because pork barbecue in Texas is a travesty. You got to go with the brisket.
Three athletes that you wish you could interview, dead or alive?
Ooh, Derek Thomas, Alabama linebacker, greatest linebacker ever. I mean, Derek Thomas. Greg Maddux, because I'd want to talk about that just crazy stat of his with 20-something thousand batters and only like 100 or so getting a 3-0 count. I got to talk to him about that. And then possibly Jesse Owens, because he's from my home state. I ran a lot of Jesse Owens memorial runs running up, and I still believe Jesse Owens is the greatest Olympian to ever live.
Last one here for you, Evan. If the great Evan Dudley were not living in Alabama, where would he be living and why?
I've been living out in California, riding combi for Bill Lawrence.
Nice. Okay. It's clearly an answer.
Creator of Ted Lasso.
An answer you've thought of it at some point in time, right?
Oh, definitely. I am a Bill Lawrence disciple. I grew up on his shows. I love them. I mean, not just Ted Lasso, but Scrubs, Spin City. His humor is mine. And if I wasn't riding sports, I'd definitely be out in California riding for Bill Lawrence.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can see it for sure. All right, one more question for you, Evan. We were talking about alternative bands on Twitter the other day, and this radio station in Portland, I got upset because they brand themselves as today's hottest alternative, and they played an Evanescence song from 2002, and not today's alternative. If you want to say it's hot, sure, I guess. I'm not going to hate on Evanescence as a band or artist or whatever. And also, I feel like once it gets included in a Ben Affleck movie, the song Bring Me to Life was, of course, in the Daredevil movie. It's not alternative anymore. It's extremely mainstream. So, first of all, do you agree with that school of thought?
I would have to agree with that, especially with alternative music. If it becomes it gets used in a movie, it's technically no longer alternative. The one exception to prove that rule might be the Captain Marvel movie, because that did use some alternative 90s music, but it was more so for the movie itself, because it was based in the 90s, not so much just to have a song in there, because I know they used a whole song. So the whole is still very alternative. So I'm not going to call them just because they were used in a movie. But more often than not, I would have to agree with that train of thought.
Fair enough. There it is, Eric.
Joe, we've done this podcast together for now going on 5 years. That's the most leading question you've ever asked. You know that, right?
You know what? It wasn't about football, so I'm allowed.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even consider Evanescence alternative anyways. That was sort of the edge of new metal, which unfortunately new metal almost destroyed regular metal. I hate new metal. It was the worst thing ever. Korn, Limp Bizkit, well, not really Korn, but more Limp Bizkit and all those other ones. But if we're talking alternative, like I said in the tweet, you know, Big Head Todd and the Monsters, REM, Live, you know, all those 90s bands that we 40-year-olds just yearn to have in our lives once more.
I saw the lead singer of Live at a shopping mall in Dayton, Ohio, like 5 years ago.
Oh, wow. I was in Dayton, Ohio about 7 years ago. I'm sad I didn't get to see him, because Live was actually a really good band. Throwing Copper, I think, had about four or five singles on it. It is one of the probably more successful alternative albums of the 90s, actually.
You know, I think Ted Kowalczyk was sleeping in the groundskeeper shed at this mall. If you go now, you could probably still catch him. Oh man. All right. Well,
Joe, really quick, before you close, I'm just gonna say this. Just to provoke you, I'm gonna personally go deep into the UDD budget.
Okay.
And purchase the rights to a Butterfly by Crazy Town to make it the intro to this podcast. Just to annoy you.
No. Just to annoy you. Actually, I think you might have to talk with Red Hot Chili Peppers, man, because the song is a rip from them, because it was a sample from a Red Hot Chili Peppers song.
You know what? That is correct. And I don't think our budget rolls that deep. So we'll next idea.
Yeah.
I'll come up with another one later, Joe.
I know it's sort of like the Tupac and Dre California Dreamin' a song from the 90s. It's like a combination of three different songs. There's like the nah. That's an old Joe Cocker song, and then the California part is from an old 70s kind of disco band. So you know, they do a lot of these things with some of these songs where they can combine two or three different. It's pretty incredible. It's probably why I liked a lot of early 90s hip hop out of California.
Yeah, sampling when done right is they make some great stuff for sure. All right, so the Blazer football program got some uncharted territory really ahead of them in what's going to be their first season with no Bill Clark. Eric, I feel pretty good about where Brian Vincent has, really about the tools that he has in front of him. They have a lot of offensive talent coming back. You know, it seems like the defense kind of already figured out they've been one of the better defenses in Conference USA. And Evan mentioned it's going to be, you know, a faster style of play. And, you know, really moving forward, looking past, you know, Dylan Hopkins with a quarterback like Jacob Zeno in the wings, I think it could really work out well for them.
Yeah, Joe, I think it's going to be interesting. And first off, you know, appreciate Evan for jumping on. Always appreciate him making the time to join us here on the pod. Hope you enjoyed the interview with him. But in terms of the future of the UAB program, I talked about this with some people who had some questions, you know, wrote the breaking news article when it came out. And I genuinely think that UAB is in good hands. Now, whether that is with, you know, Bryant Vincent, or as I kind of alluded to, Joe, I do think when you look at the salary of Bill Clark, $1.5 million, it's a, you know, among the tops in CUSA, and it's going to be amongst the tops in the American once the three schools who are leaving depart. I think UAB with the $2-2.5 million range, they're going to have some opportunities to, you know, not just settle. And listen, Evan's closer to the situation than we are, but I don't think they'll necessarily be limited to the FBS assistance range. But with that said, in terms of Bryant Vincent, I alluded to it, Joe, because we've spoken about it a lot on this podcast. He loves to push the ball downfield. I mean, you look at even Garrett Prince, a tight end, someone who averaged 20 yards a grab, you know, and that's clearly very rare from, you know, your 6'5", 240-pound target, right? Last year, Trey Shropshire, of course, got to say that three times fast, had 26 yards per catch. I believe he led the nation, if memory serves me correct, in yards per catch. I believe Tyrese Chambers was second. So two CSA guys coming in 1-2 in that regard. I do think it's going to be interesting because the passing game was really boom or bust. And as you alluded to, maybe things will speed up, move a little bit faster. But I think it'd be interesting to keep an eye on what, I don't want to say spin, but, you know, as a new coach comes in, despite the fact that he was on that staff, he's got to, you know, do it his way and impart his own imprint on the team. And I'm sure that Bill Clark certainly is going to allow him the room to do that. You know, I'm sure he wouldn't have it any other way. And clearly those two guys are very close, their relationship going back almost a decade now. But I do think it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. You know, again, talking about UAB, they've been known for defense and a strong run game. And I don't think that'll change with Dwayne McBride and Jermaine Brown Jr., you know, two people who combined for almost 2,000 yards. Of course, Dwayne McBride rushed for 1,373 yards last year. So definitely expect that run game to get things going. But as you mentioned, with the future of the program with Jacob Zeno, we certainly have talented quarterbacks in tow, and we'll see what happens. But all in all, and I, you know, I'm going to toss it back to you on this, just my speculation, I think this is going to be, they already are one of the top group of five programs in all of college football.
Yes.
And they're only ascending. You know, you have Protective Stadium, you have the practice facilities. So in my mind, Joe, I don't want to make a lazy comparison, but I look at a situation like a Gus Malzahn, you know, where he was dismissed at Auburn and he you know, kind of, you wouldn't think UCF would be the first choice, but then when you look at all the things that you factor into it, a rising group of five program in an area that's passionate about football, and certainly Birmingham is, and they've supported that program after, you know, what happened with the program being disbanded, and all the facilities in tow. I'm sorry. I mean, maybe I'm just optimistic, but I think they're going to have, you know, should the opportunity arise, I think they're going to have their run at a few, you know, maybe a Power Five coach who is dismissed or a rising G5 coach. I think they're going to have their pick.
Yeah, it's definitely not a bad situation for UAB to be in. Absolutely. I understand where you're coming from on the UCF comparisons, and I don't think they're out of line. If Bryant Vincent does continue to be UAB's head coach past this year, there's a couple different layers of added challenge there, right? Because not only are you going to have your predecessor still around, and, you know, as Clark alluded to, he wants to be around the school and the community. So having him kind of looking over your shoulder, that creates an added layer of pressure. And then also, I think it'd be different if you were in a position where, as you know, as a member of like UAB's team, if the coach before Vincent had been fired and there were culture issues and like a change was needed, right? Whereas Vincent's coming into a situation where you really have to think critically, all right, how much do you change? Because what was going on was clearly working. Bill Clark just had to step away for, you know, stuff that was, you know, to a degree beyond his control. So.
Yeah. No, go ahead, Joe. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say that's like, I don't envy him being in this position in terms of trying to solidify himself as the guy, if that is in fact his goal. And then whoever takes the reins after the fact, regardless, they're going to have that added layer of pressure where it's a little bit different with like what UCF went through to an extent.
No, undoubtedly. I mean, that's a very good point. That, you know, with UCF, you're kind of getting the program without that, you know, you don't have that, for lack of a better phrase, that father figure roaming. So I think that's a fair point. Did want to ask this really quick, Joe, you know, before, I know we got a couple odds and ends, you know, that we want to talk about, non-football sure. odds and ends. But I did want to ask you this. Just went ahead, you know, I felt it was perfect timing. As we're taping this, it is June 28th. It just dropped the first edition, I should say, in the series, our annual off-season preseason position series, position preview series in terms of Conference USA. And just want to get your thoughts on, you know, the quarterback position across the league. And, you know, if we can bring our listeners up to speed on that in case they haven't had a chance to check that out, please do. We'd appreciate the read there. But just what are your thoughts on how that one laid out? And, of course, you know, you'll be following up here in a few weeks with the offensive line and others. But just want to get your thoughts on the quarterback ranking.
Yeah, I know you had UTSA in great shape. Couldn't agree more. I still really want Frank Harris's knee to hold up because I think he has clearly demonstrated that he has that clutch factor. He has the, you know, the arm. It's just a matter of staying healthy. Otherwise, I think he is like the quarterback that's the best fit for where his team is right now. Personally, I probably would have put Chris Reynolds in the great shape category as well for Charlotte. I think Charlotte is far from a perfect team, but I don't think Chris Reynolds is the problem, if that makes sense. I think he has clearly shown that he is the guy, at least in terms of this year. I know he's got just this last season eligible, but he's played so well over the course of his time with the 49ers, and I would have put him in that category personally. Everybody else, I feel pretty good about. Western Kentucky, you know, Jarrett Daigie, you know, a good placeholder before they start diving into all of those young guys in the quarterback room. I think Nikosi Perry is going to do fine. If his offensive line plays well, which I think they will with their new pieces. We talked about Dylan Hopkins and Jacob Zeno. I think they're fine. Gavin Hardison, I think he's in a good spot. I think UTEP has some other things to figure out. Yeah, no, I think he did a pretty nice job. I don't really have a lot of confidence in really anybody in North Texas's quarterback room personally. Middle Tennessee, I don't know. I don't think the issue is that the guys in that quarterback room are bad. I think they're all pretty good. Chase Cunningham, Nick Vadiato, et cetera. It's just a matter of them staying healthy, which I think we've talked about. If that happens, then maybe you can bump them up into the good shape as opposed to we'll see. Yeah, Gunnar Holmberg, no real way to know what he'll do. Rice, there's not really a clear guy there. Although I will say I've heard a lot of good things about TJ McMahon. We'll see. Yeah, and then Louisiana Tech, no idea who's going to win that job. So we'll see. But yeah, no, I feel like he did a pretty good job. Right now, I do think the two guys that are clearly at the top of this league as far as quarterbacks are Chris Reynolds and Frank Harris.
Appreciate that, sir. Just, you know, quick follow up on that. It's interesting. You know, the teams I had in the good shape and great shape, no real concern about that. I'm super interested in, I think, and I know you're a big fan of Sonny Cumbie, and of course that interview just was just dropped today. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to that, you know, please get a chance to listen to that in addition to one we're listening to right now. But I think Sonny Cumbie being a former quarterback and what he's going to try and bring from that Texas Tech offense or his version of the Texas Tech offense, in addition to his time with Gary Patterson, really interested to see what's going to happen because you got former TCU quarterback and Matthew Downing. You know, he spent time at Georgia as well as TCU. And then Parker McNeil was a very talented, you know, JUCO player, but didn't get much time at Texas Tech. Also was at Troy. I think they have a chance to rise. I'm super, super fascinated by, you know, what may happen in Middle Tennessee. As you mentioned, it's a matter of both those guys staying healthy. Chase Cunningham obviously was banged up last year after getting off to that hot start. And then Nick Vadiato comes out of nowhere. Again, Nick is a kid who we've seen a lot of down here in South Florida. And, you know, I'm going to spare you, Joe, a 10-minute rant on the South Florida high school 7-on-7 circuit. But, you don't have to be a football savant to know that South Florida produces a lot of talents. Quarterbacks aren't really usually among the bunch, right? So, you know, seeing Nick here, definitely thought he's a nice player, definitely should, you know, earn a college scholarship. But the fact that he came out and was able to have success instantly as a true freshman outside of that, you know, 5-interception debut definitely caught me by surprise. So we're looking to see how he builds on that. You mentioned the North Texas situation, still trying to replace Mason Fine. Austin Ani has been pedestrian, certainly can get them to a bowl game, but I think it's really intriguing when you talk about Jace Reuter, who obviously was a 4-star in his career at North Carolina, you know, Grant Gunnell, who was at Arizona and Memphis. J.D. Head actually had some time and played well last year, you know, at Louisiana Tech, so that'll be interesting. I think the two that you got to, you know, maybe look the most at in terms of we'll see are FIU and Rice. It's crazy. When I was doing my research again, I was like, damn, Wiley Green is still at Rice? I actually covered Wiley Green's first start against FIU back in 2018, and that feels like a lifetime ago. I mean, that was the, you know, 9-win Butch Davis-led Panthers, which certainly feels like a lifetime ago. So I'll be interested to see what happens there with Wiley, who I know from talking to some people with Rice, they're pretty high on. And as you mentioned, TJ McMahon, even have Javonte Johnson, who led the Owls that upset over Marshall a couple years back. So it should be interesting. Obviously, Luke McCaffrey makes a switch to wide receiver. And then, of course, with the Panthers, as you mentioned, Gunnar Holmberg comes in. Still very much wait and see. Can't forget about Hayden Carlson and Grayson James. So definitely will be interesting. Whoever wins that job obviously has Tyrese Chambers to throw the football to. So all in all, you know, fun recap, fun preview to write. Next up will be the running backs. But before we close up this episode, you alluded to something in our conversation with Evan, and you know, regular listeners of this podcast know that, you know, we're going to bounce around a little bit, especially in the off season. Yes. Would you like to provide your hot take again, as far as, you know, the strong feelings on Evanescence shouldn't have been in that alternative category, and, you know, the neither today part, I guess that's fair, but I got thoughts on that, but I'll let you start.
Sure. I mean, I have talked about alt rock is probably, like, you know, kind of the blanket term for the type of music that I most enjoy, at least in terms of the stuff that can actually get played on the radio. And I don't know, I just think alt rock stations get lazy. Especially there's one station in Portland who brands themselves as today's hottest alternative, and a lot of the songs are very, very old. And it's, I don't know, it's a bummer, because there's a lot of good alt, like, bands that I think fit under that umbrella of alternative rock that you could spend more time paying attention to. But they play the song Bring Me to Life by Evanescence, which is not a bad song, but it's from 2002, and I wouldn't put it in the alternative category. It's a very mainstream song because of A, it's been in however many, like, commercials, it's all over, like, TikTok and stuff. It doesn't fit two of the three descriptors that this station uses to brand themselves, so it's annoying to me as someone who appreciates this subgenre of music.
So it's funny, Joe, the reason why I felt like I had to at least take this up with you, there is a radio station in here in South Florida, which I don't want to, you know, explicitly name, but they, Joe, just to kind of give you some background, they initially, as far as the FM signal, they are not initially, but they were for a while the FM home of a very prominent sports station here in South Florida, one that hosted, you know, Dan Le Batard and all of the prominent South Florida radio personalities. And then just one day out of nowhere, I think it was like 2015, 2016, they just brand themselves as The Shark, 104.3 The Shark, and launched into with like 5,000. Oh yeah, there was like 5,000 songs in a row, commercial free, and they were marketed as alternative rock. So I'm just going to ask you this, and listen, okay, I'm going to defer to you here, you know, as the resident expert, but yeah. If I said to you, never made it as a wise man, couldn't cut it as a poor man stealing, would you consider that alternative rock, today's alternative rock?
No.
would you consider Radioactive by Imagine Dragons alternative rock?
Maybe 10 years ago when that song came out.
Okay. All right. So we got a no and a half. That was what they led with, the shark. So yeah. Again, I feel like that you're not wrong, I just feel like that is more of the genre of alternative rock, in that, if I may take a hot take here, Joe, alternative rock as a genre, again, I am a layperson, I am a casual, is very much a 1998-2006 genre anyhow.
I think that thinking comes from the fact that radio stations don't want to move on from that era. And also, I think it's just like, it's become a blanket term for music that, like, for just whatever, you know what I mean? Like, this station after the Evanescence, this station in Portland that I'm talking about, after the Evanescence song, they played Alien Ant Farm's cover of Smooth Criminal, which I guess, and then they played the Astronaut in the Ocean song by Masked Wolf, which is not any of those descriptors, which is, I think these stations just want chaos. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I think like you just quoted a song from Nickelback, which is like, I don't think they were even popular when they were getting radio play, which is, or maybe that, you know, they probably were, but my brain is just like repressing it. I don't know.
The last thing I'll say is, in terms of the Today tagline, I kind of feel like that, again, is just a thing where it's so outdated. And I gave an example on Twitter when we were having this discussion. There's a station in Central Florida that markets themselves as Today, you know, and they play the ad. And the first song that comes after the hits of the 80s or 70s, 80s, 90s and Today, and like the 90s and Today are merged into one, and it's Vanessa Williams' Save the Best for Last, which... I assume you're familiar with the song, Joe, correct?
I am.
Okay. So you know that I think neither of us were born, or we were just born when that song came out. So that is not Today.
No. And also, when it says the 80s, 90s, and Today, you're talking about 40 years there. Like, that's such a big period of time. Like, I don't understand how you can group all those categories together, because music has changed so much. Like, you would, like, you, if you played some of the music from Today for a person who, you know, they're the peak, who, you know, in 1983 or whatever, their brain would explode. It's like the same, it's like when you talk about, like, if you showed someone from like the 1700s a dishwasher, like, they would like jump off a cliff. Like, they have it's like the same kind of thing, you know what I mean? Like, you can't even compare the two, so I don't know why they group all these things together.
For listeners who came for information on Bill Clark, we are giving you your permission to just go ahead and turn this off, because
we lost a lot of people like 10 minutes ago. And you know what? It is what it is. We got the important stuff out of the way up front.
I figured I'd give that disclaimer, because you're not wrong, Joe. And it goes into the marketing of 70s, 80s, 90s, and Today. You've just skipped 20 years worth of decades. If you're lumping, like, right, if let's say you ended in 1999, you're lumping in 23 years worth of music as Today. So maybe we're the ones who were wrong, and that what they consider Today is actually Today. It's just not Today. We could be wrong, Joe.
All right. Well, I'm going to go do some things that are legal in Oregon and think about what you just said, but all right, we'll go ahead and wrap up for now. Thank you all so much to everybody that listened, really. And of course, thanks to Evan Dudley for joining us to talk about UAB football. We'll of course have him back on soon enough to discuss where the Blazer program is headed. If you want to follow him on Twitter, Dudley Do Right AL is where you can find him on Twitter. JOEHIO _ is me. Eric C. Henry _ is Eric. And of course, at Underdog Dynasty for more G5 football content every day. We'll be back very soon with more. Go ahead and subscribe on iTunes if you haven't already, and we will talk to you soon. Happy football watching, everybody.